You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Paul DeMera of Rogers has graciously agreed to stick around and chat with me about all things tech. He is an accomplished geek, audiophile. I'm Facebook friends with Paul, and I notice I have to ask you if you will share with our listeners the photo that you put up on your Facebook wall a couple of months ago of all of your iPod collection.
It's real. You know, I decided I was going to collect all of the iPods from the very first one with the click wheel, gigabytes.
Yeah.
And I've got them all lined up
and they're on,
on display. Yeah. And people come over and, you know, most people collect like dishes or spoons. Me, no, I'm got to be different. So it's iPods. I also have the TPS L2 from 1979, the first Sony Walkman stereo cassette player, two of them actually, both work. And, you know, I can still demonstrate to the people. And it's just, hey, this is where it all started. You know, you look at the world today and the music we're carrying around on our phones now. And that's where it all started back in 1979.
With the Sony Walkman.
Sony TPS L2, blue. It's the coolest thing.
And it was like $300.
It was big money back then. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I can still remember, I used to work in the music business. I actually repaired musical instruments for a living. And I can remember when when they first branded it Walkman. And it was still about $280, I think. And a guy brought it in, one of the musicians from the Vancouver Symphony brought it into our shop. And person after person put the headsets on, and they were just going, wow. It was, and by today's standards, it's not really wow, but it was sure wow.
Exactly.
Then.
You know, lots of hiss, no Dolby, all that stuff, right?
But we still thought it was so cool.
It was
so
a big
cool.
Change.
Well, I got to email that picture to me, and I'll put it up on the site because I like the picture. I thought it was an awesome picture. I think I gave you a like on the picture. So are you going to give a like? I see you've got an iPhone 4S sitting here,
and I do.
I haven't gotten mine yet. So are you giving it a like?
I am. You know, the first thing I'll say is it's brand new. So they've changed a few things on it, and there's certainly been lots of topical discussions around, I think we're going to talk about battery life and Siri and everything else. My comment on all new devices now is these are little computers. They're not, you know, simple cell phones anymore. There's a lot going on in here. So you should always expect when you buy something that's brand spanking new that, you know, you're going to find a few little anomalies in the operating system. And Apple, I'm convinced, will take care of all of this as they have in the past.
Yeah, the battery life, I think battery life, it's certainly in the news now. It's going to be an ongoing issue with all of these devices because we want them so much smaller and we're asking them to do so much. And what people don't realize is speed, the speed that we're getting in these things. There's a cost to that speed.
Absolutely.
Just like when you drive your car fast, you use more gas. When you use a high-speed handheld device, it uses more juice. It's just that's physics. It can't be changed.
Well, it's funny because the old iPhone 4 I had, you could put it in 2G mode and, you know, your battery would last for 4 days.
Yeah.
Because the power usage for slow speed data, like 140 kilobits per second for the older technology, it just didn't use as much power. When it's in HSPA mode, though, you know, most people will kill their battery in a day. And so, you know, 2G versus 3G, exactly what you said. It's like the gas pedal. The harder you push it, the faster the fuel gets burned up. Well, that's exactly what happens with your battery. If you want it to go faster, you're going to use more power. So that's just the way it goes. And you can augment that a bit by using Wi-Fi. So if you have Wi-Fi where you work or at home and you pair up, it's going to save you a little bit of power. And what I noticed myself on the weekend is I did some testing because I'm kind of curious to see what's changed here. It would appear that there's something in the software that wants to talk to home base. And when that happens, it starts transmitting a lot. And that's why I think folks are having a bit of a battery challenge right now with some of the devices. And it's not everybody everywhere. It's just certain specific situations, right?
And it's also been intermittent. I've read a lot of reports where people have said, you know, for the first 3 weeks that they had their iPhone, they were doing reasonably well. I wouldn't say fine. But then all of a sudden something clicked in and now all of a sudden the battery is draining much faster. But that is something that will be solved. We know that.
It's understanding what's going on. And the challenge for Apple and every other manufacturer, and Apple's probably a little more challenging because they're very careful about letting people see the device before they put it in market. So their capability to test in market is somewhat limited. Yeah. They don't want people to see what it's going to look like before they launch it. So,
and a lot of the new services in iOS 5 are designed around location GPS and knowing where it is.
Yes.
The Remind Me feature, which is a phenomenal feature, which will tell you, it give you memos based on your location, not based on time. So if you know where your store is and you put that location in, you say, when I'm at the store, remind me to buy milk. You don't have a reminder constantly in your notes saying buy milk, but when you arrive at the store, you get pinged and it says buy milk. That's brilliant, but that requires power.
Absolutely. It has to be aware of where it is. It has to listen to GPS. There's a number of things that have to be going on for it to recognize it. The phone can't completely go to sleep. It has to be aware of its location at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's exactly right. Those things do use power. So we're going to have to be a little bit more mindful on, you know, what takes power, what doesn't. And everybody's going to have to figure out what works for them.
Mm-hmm. And we want all the bells and whistles.
Absolutely.
And the bells and whistles in the 4S are far more, I think, as the reality of it is far more than the press release would have led us to believe at the beginning when it was first launched. A lot of disappointment in the media on what the 4S contained, but it's become the fastest selling phone of all time.
They sold a lot of them over the weekend, the first weekend it was launched, and you know, I just picked mine up about a week ago and started using it, and I can say that they really didn't do it justice when they launched it. You have to experience it personally to appreciate it.
I don't think their head was in this launch.
It's completely
understandable.
There's a lot going on there with Steve's situation. I mean, it was somewhat tragic and very sad, actually.
The way it happened. I'm glad he saw it launched and those sorts of things. But I'm sure that the people who worked for him, their heart wasn't in this particular product launch. I think we'll see more of the old Apple come the next one. So the talk, and we've explored it a few times on the show already, and I don't know if my listeners are getting a little bit tired of it, but too bad if they are, because it's a compelling topic. Is Siri the thing that turns your crank the most about this phone?
You know, I'm still learning Siri, but once you have a chance to use it, I'm a big Star Trek fan. I mean, I've got all the DVDs for the first 3 years and
really?
Everything. I'm a big, huge Star Trek fan. So, you know, you know how the computer would answer Captain Kirk and others on the bridge. This is the same thinking. You can ask Siri just about anything you want, and it will either respond with a web page or give you a direct answer. And that changes the game when you're mobile. You don't have to type stuff in. You just simply think of a question, and it will give you an answer.
And
so, yeah, it is a game changer.
Now, are you using it? Have you started to, like, are you texting with it? Are you using it for tasks?
I'm currently using it for sending text to my son, for instance, and people I know at the office that I talk to via text.
Do you think you'll ever type in, other than for privacy's sake, do you think you'll ever type in a text again?
Yeah, there's times when you want to have a longer sort of thought process behind what you're authoring. Maybe it's
okay.
Not a quick message. It makes a lot of sense for quick messages. Hey, you know, I'm downstairs right now. I'll meet you in the lobby. That's great. If you're going to type something like 30, 40, 50 words, you probably don't want to use Siri for texting that. You want to type it in and, you know, there's usually more going on in your head. And Siri understands when you take a break, it assumes that you're finished talking, and so it starts to do something with that. So if your brain's thinking, it's assuming that you've stopped talking, and that may not work for everybody.
And there's an article which I'm going to post online which talks about the science behind Siri and how it works and how much it goes back and forth with how much processing is done on the phone versus how much is done in the servers. And there's a constant mm-hmm. conversation going on between where things that it can handle locally versus things that it has to turn to the back end service for.
They've done some amazing stuff with the artificial intelligence. There's a lot going on locally. There's a program called Dragon Naturally Speaking, for instance, that's a completely local program, and it will pretty much translate text. It would appear that Siri does a lot of that locally.
Yeah.
When it gets a little confused and it's having trouble, it kind of goes and says, okay, what does this really look like? So it goes a little deeper into what you're saying and then figures it out.
Heavy lifting.
Exactly.
And the knowledge and the variables in the response. There's a site which is this kind of it's called a computational knowledge engine. It's Wolfram Alpha,
mm-hmm.
And it if you type in questions, it answers. And from what I understand, there's a lot of the same technology that Siri uses, which creates some of the humor behind it and some of the whimsy behind it, which is really part of the compelling story behind Siri, is the fact that it will give you whimsical answers. I'm sure you've used it more as a joke, you know, to try and make yourself laugh in the early days than you have for actual work, because you're looking,
exactly.
You're kind of exploring the boundaries.
You're kind of curious to know what it's going to come up with. Like if you ask Siri what age, how old is Siri, it comes up with different responses and they're funny. They're just plain funny. I mean, you just don't expect them and they usually gather a laugh.
And they might not be funny, but it's really funny having your phone answer that way.
Exactly.
See, that's the thing.
Exactly.
Is, you know, if you or I answered that, it might not seem quite as humorous, but the fact that it's your phone doing it, it's a darn cute phone, so it's like phones say the darndest things.
Yep.
And there's already websites up with the funniest Siri responses, which is pretty good.
It's kind of like what you with the automatic spell checker on the iPhone. There's a site for that too. Some of the things it's come up with along the same lines, just humorous, right?
Now I won't let you, I won't ask you this under you with your Rogers hat on. I won't even ask you the question at all. But I'll just pose it to the world in general. Why would anybody want any other phone is what I'm wondering at this point.
It's a funny thing. I've found it's the same thing with cars, houses, everything people buy, right? There's a personal taste issue. It's like stereo equipment. I'm obviously an audiophile. The Apple product has its own sort of stuff behind it, the way it works, how you use it. It's very closed, though. So, you know, you got to get everything from the store.
The iTunes store, and a lot of people don't like that, yeah.
It bothers them, so they're looking for a little more open OS. Some people want a larger screen. I myself find the simplicity of using it what I really get turned on by. It just works for me.
Yeah.
Same thing with my Mac Air here and, you know, other Mac products. I really like their philosophy of simplicity.
And the screen size is the one that I will go with because it is a bit of a smaller screen by today's standards.
Yes.
When you start using some of the Android phones, you get an appreciation for the...
And different technology as well. OLED displays, you know, the AM
yes.
OLEDs are amazing at contrast and just they pop, right?
So. Yeah, there's some absolutely beautiful stuff there. Now, are you using an iPad?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course you are. Why don't you even ask?
Got it all.
But interesting news that just came down yesterday was the fact that the Kobo was acquired. Now, do you use your iPad as an ebook reader? Or do you use an
No, I haven't done a lot of reading on it. A little bit of reading, but not a lot. But yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Very interesting.
You yeah.
know, what's that all about?
So they're a huge Japanese web retailer, Rakuten.
Mm.
They paid $315 million.
It's a large bag of money.
That's a lot of money for those little for $100 ebook readers, but it should legitimize Kobo in the international marketplace a lot more, which is going to be interesting because Sony's done very well in
yep.
Japan with the ebook reader. Now, do you use it? Do you use a Kobo? Do you use an ebook reader?
Well, as I said, I've read a little bit on my iPad. I tend to not so much read books. I tend to write excerpts. You know, different pieces of material talking about a specific subject. I certainly read books as well, but you know, the books that I've traditionally read in paper, I'm now looking at rereading. In fact, in electronic form.
Yeah,
it's a great way to go, right? I mean, it just you can bring it anywhere with you, and
good. The other kind of technology-related news that I thought you might be kind of on top of is this debacle that's been going on at HP with the as Apothecary left the firm as Nero. It was almost like Nero burning Rome in some cases, selling off this, closing down that, and of course the WebOS. They've since come back and said they're probably not going to get out of the PC division. Well, gee whiz, they're the biggest PC manufacturer in the world. They're not going to get out of it. That might be a good business decision. And even though WebOS is still said to be dead, which is the operating system behind the tablet, the touchpad that HP has, it's the operating system they bought from Palm, HP has a developer program. I don't know if you noticed this, but HP has a developer program that you can still buy touchpads for $150 for WebOS developers that register. So
what's that all about, right?
Yeah. And what do you now, having, you know, you've worked with the BlackBerry OS a lot, you've worked with the Apple, the Android. What's your thoughts about WebOS, and is there a place for it in the mobility game still?
There well could be. I find that, you know, at the end of the day, everybody's trying to get into the game because there's lots of opportunity to you know, grow the business and become part of the marketplace. So I think HP sounds like they're still trying to figure out the strategy behind where they want to go with this product because they've got something magical. It really is a great OS. It's based on Linux, and it can do a lot.
A good editorial online this week that RIM should consider buying it. So maybe that
right.
might be the place. We've run out of time, Paul. I have to thank you so much for coming in. Paul DeMera is my guest. He works for Rogers, but he is a geek extraordinaire. Are you going to send me the picture of your of all of the iPods?
Absolutely.
How many are there in that picture?
There's actually 21 on. It's a 3x7 matrix of.
Okay.
I've got them all in stand. So there's more, but those
21
are the 21 iPods.
All of them by Paul. That's Paul DeMera. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.